Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash Podcast. And this week, it is time for some more Shark Tank. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash Podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're doing some more Shark Tanking, and we got a super sweet crew here today. We got Phil and Krim and Tomer. How's it going, guys? Are you ready for some Shark Tank?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. I have some jank for you all. Mm. If not floodgates, maybe these. Have you heard of Fade Away?
Oh my god, Tomer. Tomer's gonna get kicked out of the Shark Tank building here shortly.
Yeah. Has any Shark Tank member or like pitcher ever gone back onto the show to resell the same item?
Persistence.
But you know.
I did not change the product, but you know,
I have all the
better
same
of
pitches,
age. It's moldier and better than ever.
Before we get to the pitches, we got a couple of sponsors today. Today's show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution to flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGOLDFISH to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service via sending as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance. It pays just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit is the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about plays and cards that lead to big moments at the table. And our top comment comes from Geek and Seek. Says, Morgan here. Honorable mention to Scrambleverse. But no, actually, Shadrach Silverquill is one of the cards for me. Don't get to play it too often, but it gets the table talking and leads to fun deals and such. So, Morgan, somehow stealing the top comment. I almost excluded it because I wasn't sure if it was
rigged.
Fair for Goldfish to win the top comment. But yeah, shout out to Scrambleverse, I guess. Everyone's favorite big moment at the table.
No shout outs.
I agree.
To Scrambleverse.
Anyway. Thank you for the comments. Leave another one. Maybe you'll get it next week. And let's do some Shark Tanking. So you probably know how this goes if you've seen past episodes of Shark Tank that we've done or the TV show. But basically, we're going to take turns pitching a sleeper card or a pet card to the rest of the crew and see if we can get them on board with playing that card. And we're going to start with Phil today. Phil, you're first in the Shark Tank. Give us your pitch.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I recently found a card which I could only find recently because it is just released. Is that illegal on this format? But I guess at least me missed it during spoiler season. And then I ordered cards from the new set and just went through everything again. And then I found Desperate Plea. 2 mana. As an additional cast to cast this, sacrifice a creature and then choose one or both, which is probably what I overread in spoiler season. Return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield if its power is less than or equal to the sacrificed creature's power, or destroy a creature. So for 2 mana, you mini victimize something. So you sacrifice a creature, you get back a creature that has to have less than or equal power, and you straight up destroy a creature. So I've been trying this in Jadar, Ghoul Caller of Nephalia, where I can only always sack a 2-2 zombie. And the reason why I try this is I checked my deck list, and let me just get through the cards here. So obviously you can get back one drops like Viserysia, Shambling Ghast and stuff, but the important part is Orcish Bowmasters, Blood Artist, Marionette Apprentice, Zulapod, Cutthroat, all the Blood Artist, not Sephiroth, that's 3 power. You could sacrifice something with 3 power, though. And then in the 3 drops, you get Ayara, First of Lochrain, Morbid Opportunist. Let's just go through, let's just get the bigger ones. Yakmoth has 2 power, Pitiless Plunderer has 1 power, Gray Merchant has 2 power. So I don't know what I misread in this card. Maybe I thought it would be mana value instead of power, and then you could kind of reanimate nothing if you sacrifice a token. But since it's power, even if you sacrifice a 1 power thing, you can get back a Blood Artist or Orcish Bowmasters. This one's mono black. If you play like Golgari, you can just get a bigger Steve or Eternal Witness. So I think this card is just pretty easy to hit a good, I don't want to say floor, because the floor is no targets on both modes. But I think there's a pretty easy way to make it a clean 2-for-1, if I calculate correctly. I don't know how your commander creates tokens or something, but for my deck, it's very easy to sacrifice a 2-power thing. And I think this card plays very well. That said, and I should probably not say this during the pitch, haven't cast it yet, didn't draw it for Commander Knight. I'm sure it's good.
Yeah, so that might have made your pitch slightly worse there, Phil.
Full disclosure.
I will say, I think I also misread this card a little bit. I think the thing I missed, so I did catch the one or both thing, but I kind of overlooked that it was power and not mana value, and that does make it way different. Like, the stuff that you mentioned there, like being able to sack a Jadar token, get back a Gary or something, that actually seems pretty powerful. I think this is a card that you might be able to get me to invest in, assuming it's specifically for, like, your Jadar deck, maybe a Sephiroth deck, like, with a commander that actually, like, I don't know, has a sack theme, preferably something that even gives you fuel for the desperate plea to sacrifice. So in the right deck, I think I might be on board with this card. But what do the rest of you sharks think, Tomer and Krim? Where are you at on this one?
I mean, I'd advanced in, like, Aristocrats, but it works specifically great in an Aristocrats deck that can make sack fodder very readily. Like, I feel like Jadar is just, like, it's a home run for this. Yeah. Because, like you said, there's so many hits for it, and your 2-drop commander is the one providing the sack fodder. That seems perfect. I also like that the creatures enter the battlefield untapped when you reanimate with it. Double check. Yeah, it enters untapped. I believe, like, Victimize, which is another card that I consider very, very good. The creatures enter tapped, so they can't be immediate blockers, or if they have haste, they can't immediately attack and stuff. And so while this doesn't get 2 creatures and has more hoops or whatever, the fact that you're always killing something, no matter what, whenever you sack a creature and the reanimation gets it untapped, is very, very nice. So I think, like, yeah, I would definitely invest in this card for Aristocrats.
What about you, Grim?
I think I like it. I think I like it. Mostly, funny enough, you all are, exactly, like, the removal side of it makes me happy just because this plays and leans into my play style. I like that it can be removal and also do other things, but removal first. So there's always a spot in the game where I have something to do with this. So its versatility and it having Zuko on the artwork makes me very happy. So I'd invest in this. I'm questionable about the reanimation side and how often I'll actually use that, but that's the only deck I could see of mine having an application with this is, like, maybe Wick, right? Because you get the giant snail. Outside of that, I don't have as many uses, at least for low, like, costing creatures. But I'm sure there's a lot of Aristocrats and, like, all of that, like, your Jardar deck that'll love this. So, yeah, I'd invest. I'm, like, it just barely clears the hurdle for me.
And I think...
Yeah, I think it's...
Oh, go ahead, Phil.
I think it's, like, I don't want to... It's probably the wrong... Like, pot decks where you sacrifice value creatures are probably very good with this in the mid to late game, because you can just sacrifice a, I don't know, Eternal Witness, get back a Wood Elves or something. And then, like, Gitrok, the Monstrous Rite or whatever it's called. There are decks that actually want to sacrifice big power things. And then I guess this is another one where it's like an easy auto include almost.
Yeah, you
Sharks,
could
I
do
think
some
we need to vote.
Cool things with high power creatures. I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote yes within the context of the right archetype. I wouldn't play this in most decks, but in the deck that would want it, I'm a yes.
I'm also yes for these same reasonings.
Yeah. Okay. Lock it in. Okay.
I'll let you know what place when I draw it.
Yeah. Let us know once you draw it, Phil.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to our next pitch. Krim, I think you're up this time.
Hmm.
Boom. Easy right off the pitch. Right off the bat, this pitch is going to be killing it. It's, of course, Maximum Carnage, a Foreigner Red saga from the Spider-Man set. Until your next turn, each creature attacks each combat, if able, and attacks a player other than you, if able. Chapter 2, add 3 red mana. Chapter 3, deal 5 to each opponent. Now, if you go back to Chapter 1, and you read that, and it is, until your next turn, each creature attacks each combat, if able. Now, this does not work like Goad, and like Goad's like, okay, when Goad happens, it's whatever's on the board at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. Everything that you have that can attack next turn will have to attack, and that includes anything played after this is played. So, like, mm-hmm. if you play a haster or something like that, you got to swing at someone else that's not me. It's almost like when I look at my deck building, and, you know, I talk about the 5 board wipes that I play in my deck, I call this the half a board wipe. I play 5.5 board wipes, and this is the 0.5, because that turn off is huge. And then it allows me to get everybody tapped down, and then it leads into the additional 3 red mana to allow me to do a big spicy play. And then, of course, that 5 damage to each opponent is very nice. It's the perfect cherry on top, not the main course of the meal, but definitely a perfect topper after having a wonderful, delicious meal. So this card is exactly what I like, and it affects the board. Once again, like, you play it, it really does affect the board.
Meh. Sharks, what are we feeling?
Meh.
You guys go first. I'm not sure on this Maximum Carnage. What do you guys think? Are you in on this card?
I think it plays well. It's a Spider-Man card, I think it plays a little like the... I guess people can block, but the Taunt of the Ramparts or something. Taunt from or off?
Taunt from the Ramparts, Lord of the Rings, like 5 mana Boros.
Yeah,
this one. Go to your opponents and they can't block.
It's like, feels like an Insurrection, and maybe this also features similar, same mana value. And actually, add 3 red is kind of red. I think this Richard like this. Mm-hmm. It's a mono red ramp.
The problem is so much better than Taunt from the Ramparts, right? Because, I mean, you're only goading what's on board, and you only get it once. Or you only get that first part, and that's it.
So,
this plays a lot better than you
think. There's no untapping after taunting.
So, I mean, the thing is, though, so yes, it is an upside that it applies to future creatures as well, but I feel like that's a relatively narrow upside. Like, yeah, there are going to be times when someone hastes a creature or there's mass haste on the battlefield.
Creature lands.
But a lot of things, like, you could just not activate the creature land, or you could just not play the haste creature.
Sure.
So I'm not sure, like, how much different it actually would play than goading in practice. Like, maybe sometimes it would, but I feel like, to me, it reads like mass goad. I would definitely add this to, like, my Furkrag deck if I'm playing, like, a goad deck that is specifically about making creatures attack each other. But it's just, like, a generic effect. Honestly, I would rather just play There and Back Again and make a Smog if I'm going to be ramping with a 5 mana Saga
getting
an actual land on the battlefield.
See, that's wild, because There and Back Again does not interact with the board.
Yeah, that's not good.
I built my $1 million company on the back of There and Back Again. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to hear you, shark pitcher.
This plays so much better than that. There's no way.
This makes me so mad.
So is this card actually even, like, I'm not going to dock it for being a Spider-Man card. That's not, that doesn't matter to me. I just don't know if those, like, let's not get 2 war counters do that much. 5 mana mass goad, sure. Make 3 mana, yes, that's always going to be fine. 5 damage to each opponent.
Prim, you've goaded me in real life because I'm so mad at you. Because this was the one I was most excited to put on my Shark Tank.
Wow.
I was going to fill in the morning, and then I see the Crim sniped it, and I was so upset. Because, like, this card is very cheap. And please, please, when you're watching this, do not buy out this card. I swear. So what I was doing a 40 decks under $40. And I was doing a bunch of red decks. And I kept looking at this card because it came out really recently. And it's pretty cheap. And it's doing all the things that I want it to be doing. And I'm like, God, it's so cheap. And I played it. And this card, like Krim said, it's kind of like a pseudo board wipe, but it's also like the red fog effect. This card is so good, and you could just play it whenever you want at any given time in the game. The goad effect is just really good because it forces people into uncomfortable attacks, and it gives you a full turn of not being attacked, which is nice. But also, like, people are attacking into, like, small creatures, small utility creature attacking into things like your Oracle Moldai or whatever is dying to a blocker or whatnot, and then you're clearing the path for an attack next turn. And then the mana, three mana, is just good.
Mana is huge.
It puts you up three next turn. That's just amazing. And then the final one, okay, it's maybe doesn't look the most impressive, but late game, after you force everybody to attack, you know, turn nine or whatever, you force everybody to attack with a lot of damage, maybe that five could be the difference between you killing somebody or not on that turn. It's so good. If for five mana, it's so good. And it's 40 cents. Please don't buy it out. I have so many, all the red decks have this in it. I put it in my Furcrag deck, and then I was like, why don't you just put it in all my red decks? And then it's good. And it's
that's
so good.
That's legit where I'm at. I play it in just red decks. If it has red, I love it.
It's so good.
Now I kind of want to buy it out just to troll Tomer and make him rewrite his article. Yeah.
Please, you can buy it out after December when the video comes out, please. Cold.
Okay, Shards. I'm out on this one. The third lore counter just doesn't do enough for me. Like, yes, I'll play it in Furcrag, but I'm not going to invest in it. The third lore counter, not exciting enough. So I guess it's up to you guys. I know Tomer's in. So, Phil, I think you're really the deciding vote here.
I'm actually out. I don't want the price to go up. I'm not investing.
Leave it alone. Even though I just think it plays very well. And I don't like attacking. And forcing me to attack is just fits my face. And I think it's brutal for a lot of board states.
It's the red fog, Commander but
games,
it does so much more.
People are so passive. And it's like, no, you cannot pass the turn. You have to attack somebody.
That might be why
it can't
like
be me.
I don't have to
and
attack
it cannot
people.
Be me.
Wait, do you have to? I mean, I guess you can play it post-combat.
Yeah, you'd have to play a second main. And then it wouldn't affect you if you played a second main.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Well, right. I think we got a winner. Two sharks in. So, Krim, you have the investment. Let's move on to Tomer. Tomer, what's your first pitch?
Okay. I have a lot. I have some weird stuff, but let's go for one that is like weird, but I feel very appropriate and timely for all you listeners out there. I got Invoke Calamity. Invoke Calamity is an instant, a red instant, and it's got a lot of red pips in it. It's five mana, and it's one generic and four red pips. So you got to be really red heavy to cast this, like one, two colors. It's an instant that says you may cast up to two instant or sorcery spells with total mana value six or less from your graveyard and or hand without paying their mana cost. If those spells would be put into your graveyard, exile them instead. Exile Invoke Calamity. So this is insane flexibility. Not only can you cheat out spells from your hands and also your graveyard, so it accesses flashback at instant speed, but you can do sorceries at instant speed too. So this is actually like a five mana board wipe when you need it. You have a board wipe in your hand or graveyard and somebody swinging at you that you didn't expect, you wipe the board at instant speed. It's pretty good. And the reason why I mentioned it was very timely for right now is Avatar just came out and we just got a lot of firebending. So suddenly those red pips, if you're in a deck that makes firebending mana pretty consistently, like, I don't know, maybe the most popular commander that comes out of Avatar by a long mile is Azula. And she likes casting stuff at instant speed and she happens to be firebending. Well, you cast Invoke Calamity, you get to copy it, you get to cast up to two spells again at instant speed, you get to copy those two, Azula, boom, 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 and she even provides the firebending mana to cast all those red pips too. This card is actually insane. I started putting it in like all my Is It Spellslinger decks, but like, because the red is expensive, but it's so good. And you actually get more mana value than what you put into it because it's five, but you get up to six mana value out of it too. And instant speed board wipes and stuff is just, oh, Oh, it's so good. It's so good. So there you go. That's a weird one. Azula tech for you all. Timely.
I mean, so the biggest downside I see is it does have a lot of red pip. So yeah, your Azula mana base might be a little sketchy, although I guess the firebending mana kind of helps there, right? Because that's all red mana. So if you're firebending, that kind of takes care of it. I think the card's very powerful. I think the card's very powerful as long as you got a bunch of spells. I don't think I can invest in it, though, because I'm already invested in a company that's built to stop firebending, and it would be a conflict of interest if I was now, you know, investing in these firebending cards. So I might have to sit out the investment, but I do think the card is actually very good.
Embracer in a red.
That's my preview card. So,
oh, I didn't even know that. Oh my god! Yeah. I was researching the sharks.
Oh, I didn't know you were buttering me up, Tomer. Okay. No,
and the person who previewed it is just so charming and smart.
Best preview
and has
article
the best
ever.
What a great preview article,
I've
by
never
the way.
Seen a better preview card.
Yeah.
No, like I do like this for that exact reason. Because of the firebending, as you had mentioned, because for the longest time, the quad red pips, okay, if you're out of a mono red deck, I probably would not play this. Like, if I wouldn't even play this in two colors, to be completely honest. Unless it's like, you know, Invoke Despair, where my whole deck, everything makes black mana, and you have an Urborg. But since there's no red Urborg outside of a Blood Moon, I find it very, very, okay, there's other Blood Moon effects as well, but I find this very hard to cast outside of a mono red deck. But in a mono red deck, I actually love this card. I think there's a lot of play to it. And like Tomer had mentioned, being able to do it instant speed, super solid. Love that. Love getting around timing restrictions. I love this in mono red. I will buy into this for simply mono red.
I do it in Is It Spell Slinger. It's not too bad for me, at least.
I think at least you got to be spell slinging. I don't know.
You do have a lot
like
of spells,
if you're mono red,
right?
To goblins, I don't know. But is it's best thing? Is it doesn't have the best mana fixing? Although they do have a bunch of treasures. I want to like this card, and when it released, I thought, wait, this gotta be good. And I'm not a big instant or sorcery guy, so I'm probably never gonna find a deck where I would put this in, like that I play, unless it's Clash. I like the idea of firebending into it. That is cool. And copying it with Azula,
doubling it with Azula is kind of insane, right?
You double a spell, and then you double the spells you cast off.
Oh my god,
it's ridiculous. Yeah. So much value. Yeah. And it makes red mana. I mean, okay, maybe I'll invest. It might not be ethical, but I'm in.
I will embrace the problem.
Yeah, that's a good pick. All right, what's our final votes, Sharks?
Yeah, final votes.
I
like it. I like instant sorceries. I'm a fan. And it's my preview card. Okay, but that actually has like very little weight into what this actually does for me. I just like it because it's good for spell slinging.
I want to like it, so I give it a little investment, but not too much because I tried to play it.
Just a little off the top.
Yeah. A little, sure.
All right. We're going to move on to my first pitch. And all right, Sharks, I got a good one for you. So, you know, Sharks, over the past few seasons, we've seen the Fog meta emerge on Commander Clash, where Richard started playing Fogs, and then everyone started playing Fogs, and then people started playing damage can't be prevented spells like Isengard Unleashed to beat the Fogs. I think the logical step of this meta is to play Fogs that beat the damage can't be prevented spells. So today, I would like to sell you on a forgotten Commander 2019 gem in Mandate of Peace. So Mandate of Peace, it's a 2-mana instant that you can only cast during combat, and it makes it so your opponents can't cast spells for the rest of the turn, and it ends the combat phase. So I know 2-mana sounds like a lot for a Fog, when some of the best ones are 1-mana or Obscuring Haze can be free, but this isn't like some 5-mana Ink Shield or super expensive Fog. It's only 2-mana, plus there's some huge upside on this card, because first, it ends the combat phase. So this is a Fog that actually beats damage can't be prevented spells, because you're not preventing the damage. You're just fizzling the attacks. The attackers are removed from combat. Anything on the stack also gets removed, which is really interesting because right now in Commander, The hottest thing going is firebending. If you look on EDH Rec in like the past month of commanders, Fire Lord Azula is number one. But even beyond that, Avatar Aang is like in the top 10. Iroquois Lotus is in the top 10. Fire Lord Zuko's in the top 10. Everyone's playing these decks that have firebending commanders. And Mandate of Peace is so good against them because it doesn't just prevent the damage, but it also fizzles the firebending. It fizzles any of the spells that Azula would have put on the stack if it gets to that point. So it's like this ridiculous super fog. But it keeps getting better because it keeps your opponent from casting spells for the rest of the entire turn, not just during combat. So if your opponent plays the way that you're supposed to play Magic, which is you do combat first and then you play during your second main phase, this can be two mana, make your opponent skip their turn, essentially, along with fizzling any of their combat damage. So I'm here to sell you on Mandate of Peace being a worthwhile addition to your fog slots, especially right now where firebending's everywhere, and for the Commander Clash meta where we just have this weird inbred like fog thing going on. So I think this card's actually kind of insane right now. But what do you think about Mandate of Peace?
This is the
I think I'm gonna order one. This is
inbred.
It's also only like a dollar or something, $1.50. Yep. It's like still very checked. Cheap and it doesn't have any reprints yet.
This is so inbred though. For us to say this feels absurdly inbred, right? Like
in
you,
our
you
meta,
chalk
yeah,
it up
yeah.
with like a darkness call it a day, but this is like specifically good in our meta.
And firebending. It's good against firebending.
Yeah. No one's shutting down the firebending that way, right? They're just going to remove the creature or something like that.
People will do anything but run Swords of Plowshares.
Yeah. Play Swords. I do not know how I feel about this card. I like the idea. I like the gotcha moment. That is what's appealing to me.
Your
the gotcha moment speaks to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I am.
Phil is ordering as we speak.
Right
I can
now.
See him
yep.
typing. Yeah.
yep. I'm not gonna lie. I like that.
I like it as a memorable card. Like we just had a podcast recently where we're talking about like Rakdos Charm and stuff like that. This card is just very funny because also like Seth said, if you were going to be attacking, generally speaking, you would attack first and then cast most of your spells afterwards, unless it would enhance your attack in any given way. That's like the proper way of playing Magic. And this kind of punishes that. And I think that's very, very funny.
It really
where
does.
Like if you have like a good attack or whatever, and you didn't need to haste anything in or whatever, or pump up your team, you just go in and attack and you're going to cast your spells later and Mandate of Peace shows along and you're just like, no, skip your turn.
Yep.
Oops. I think that's very fun. I think that's worth it just for that. Is it worth the extra mana in general over a fog? Probably not, but I think it's very funny. And then I guess if you're in a super inbred meta like us,
then it gets even better.
I'm running damage can't be prevented all the time. But I think it's worse than a fog unless it's funny, and then it's better.
Am I underestimating your opponent can cast spells this turn? Maybe people just generally don't play, I guess, as they should. In depends on the situation, but usually you should attack first. In this case, it just time stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, two mana make your opponent skip their turn is crazy. I think it comes up quite a bit. Like there are times
it also counts as a fog.
It does counter
a
fog.
It also is a fog.
It's a fog that counters a fog. Yeah. I mean, I think there are times when people want to like haste stuff in and they do stuff first main phase. But a lot of times I think this will be able to like make someone skip their turn. Like a decent percentage of the time you can get the like full skip your turn out of it.
You can just, I mean, you usually don't, if you don't attack, you don't go into your second main. But
You could still cast it during combat even if no one attacked you, I guess, technically.
Yeah, but
if
then,
there were no creatures, but... All right, where are we at, Sharks? What are we voting? What are we voting on this one? Give me that money.
I'm investing in it, but I'm optimistic.
I don't think it's superior than just a straight up fog, but I think it's funny, and so I will invest in it for memes.
I like funny. So I'm also in on it just because of that, and because
it's a small investment.
Forget about this card.
Yep, same.
All right, let's go to round two. Round two, back to the top of the order. Phil, hit us with something good.
Here's a card that I thought in spoiler season, wait, that's gotta be good. And I think it's worth the 5 mana. It is pull from the weft, 5 mana sorcery. Return up to 2 target non-land permanent cards from your graveyard to your hand, and then return up to 2 target land cards from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Mm-hmm. So, funnily enough, it's an uncommon. It is very, very cheap. So cheap, in fact, that you can easily get the, what is it, promo pack version. That's how I noticed the card, because every set I check these weird etch foil or something, full art, full color promos, because I like to look at them. And Edge of Eternity actually had three good ones. I ordered all of them, and I played 2 of them, and this one, I think it's going to make it into one of my decks eventually, if I get enough fetches, because that's kind of the crux here. You're really going to make sure you get 2 lands with this. So the ceiling is you get 2 lands, and then you get 2 permanents. The floor is nothing, as with a lot of cards, but I think it's very easy to have this be a weird mix of Eternal Witness once and then like Explosive Vegetation, or am I? I don't know. 5 mana, only late game, but you ramp and you refill your hand. It's a 4/1, so I think that's good.
This is a banger. This is like, yeah. So I saw this card as a landfall deck or a landfall card. Like, if you're a landfall deck, generally speaking, you're running, even like the bad fetches are fine. Like, again, I was doing 40 decks under $40, and like I made like 3 different landfall decks. Yeah. Each one was like, okay, well, Terramorphic Expanse is 2 landfall triggers. I don't care that it enters top. Like, yeah, it's not as good as a fetch. But if you run enough of those, then pull from the web.
The Capanna and also in a land. Yeah. Will fetch for themselves with this, even if they enter tapped.
Yeah. You just run a bunch of those and you're ramping anyway because you're a landfall deck. So 5 mana, who cares? And you're probably permanent heavy anyway. So it's very easy to be like 5 mana, I explosive veggie, landfall trigger double times, and then I get 2 other permanents at the same time. That's kind of bananas. It's kind of bananas. I don't know about other archetypes, but this is very good.
It's kind of funny because I didn't even think of landfall. I was thinking of, yeah, like South Mill graveyard style decks, right? Or like land shenanigan style decks, which Wizards seems to be printing more and more of. These commanders like Hearthhole that care about lands going in and out of the graveyard, or get lands in and out of the graveyard, sacrifice lands. So in a deck like that, it seems really, really good. I actually really like this. I could see just playing this in some of my like 3 to 5 color decks, because I already, the way I build my mana base is like 9 or 10, depending on the colors, like fetch lands anyway. Like, I'm playing all these fetch lands. So it seems like kind of a free roll. I remember back in my day, we had, Restock was like 5 mana, return 2 cards from your graveyard to your hand, and then you had to exile Restock. And that was like actually a card I used to play in the early days of Commander just to get 2 things back to my hand. This seems so upgraded compared to that. So yeah, I think this card's actually like really good.
Oh, hey, everybody. I just want to say I appreciate you bringing this pull through the weft to the shark sale here. As someone who has played this card, everything you both said, and Phil too, right? All 3 of y'all, everything sounds great in theory.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Having taken this card out of 2 of my decks I'm so low on this card just because the promo is great. I love it. I love Umbral Zeller, call it Zeller or whatever, the other promo, the Sack Owl.
The Ancient's pretty good as well.
yeah, right? Like, normally those are sweet cards. But yeah, any of those other promos would have been better than this one because I just feel like this one, more often than not, I'm only getting half of it, and I took this out of my Sultai Self Mill deck because also 5 mana. You may not think it, but it is still 5 mana. It's 5 mana
Green.
To get 2
that's
lands.
That's like 2 mana.
That's what you like to think. Yes. In practice, the games that I've had, though, it just clunks up, and 5 mana, it kind of bogs the whole turn down. Everybody just beat me up instantly. On top of me being me, but beat me up on top of that. I got 2 new cards back to hand that everybody knows about, and it's hard. The cards that make an impact to the board that I want are spells. The permanents that I put are too big to play all in the same turn after playing pull through the weft. Yes, even with the 2 mana that I get back. So more often than not, this is a five mana, just kind of do a lukewarm amount of things. And I think this is a better slot where there's other cards that could just do a lot and more efficiently. Like, one of the either halves of this card more efficiently. I do like the versatility in theory, but it just has not played well for me. So maybe that's my bias in this, that is, it has burned me.
I am not buying
on this one.
Oh, Krim's analysis does kind of scare me. Although Krim is not really a green player, so I still think.
What are you all talking about? I'm the most green mage guy now.
I still think I would try it. But it is true that five mana is kind of a lot. And if you try it, have you played with it much yet, Phil? Like, I think if you find out you're not getting the two lands, most of, like, if you're not getting all the modes on it, it probably is kind of bad.
You gotta,
like,
get
if you
lands,
get all
yeah.
the modes, it's yeah. gonna be really good. If you don't get all the modes, then there's probably
think about
ways
all
to
the
do
hoops
it.
You have to go through. By the way, I know it sounds in theory like, yeah, okay, if you top deck this turn 42, sure, but any earlier than like I think because like turn eight, any earlier than turn eight, it does feel kind of rough. It's kind of rough still.
I can't imagine.
I remember that game where I cast a Conflux and then you all killed me because I just tutored for a bunch of cards and I used all my mana to cast it. I could see like that kind of happening on a lesser extent here where like you double ramp, you get two scary things back in your hand, you used all your mana and pulled for the weft and everyone's like, oh my God, we got to get Seth because he just got all this value. So I could see that being like Krim kind of mentioned that. Like I could see that being a concern. The art's really, look at those colors though. I think I'm still in.
On that front.
My $40 Tanook deck has 12 lands that easily put themselves in the graveyard, like fetch, like Mirror Landscape and the Capenna lands and the Evolvings and whatnot. I don't know. I feel like this is pretty easy to get on, even on a $40. And then if you have fetches, so you have proper fetches and everything. I don't know. I'm still investing in this. I wonder where it outside of
it sounds like example, like you're right. Everything you're saying is right, but it just doesn't play like
once
that.
Once you play with it, it just...
My Glarb just like a rampaging Baelos on the battlefield. And when you cast it, you make 2/4/4s or something. Isn't that good? Isn't that
this
fine?
This was in my Glarb deck. I just didn't like it. It just, it was not...
I'm still investing. I'm still in. I'm going to try it. I might have the same experience as Krim and end up taking it back my investment after a couple of games. But for now, I'm gonna remain optimistic, and I'm in.
I'm watching you all buy the blender that doesn't work.
You do have to work for it a lot.
But I'm
going to
buy the blender anyways.
Oh, all right. So two in, Krim out. Let's move on. Tomer, what do you got for us?
Okay, I have something that's good, but now I want to talk about something weird. All right, okay. I haven't had a chance to ever talk about this card. So in blue, we've talked. I know some of you sharks have been investing heavily in unconventional ramp in blue. Yeah, you know I'm a big connoisseur of that as well with my War of Invention, Retrace Image, yada yada. And I know at least like Seth, for example, was big on Thieving Skydiver, which is like for 3 mana, you steal a Sol Ring. That's pretty good. For 4 mana, you steal somebody's Mana Rock. That's pretty good as well. Well, sharks, I come to you today with a little card I forgot existed until I built a pre-modern Commander deck. This is called Steel Enchantment. It's double blue, 2 mana, double blue, enchantment, gain control of enchanted enchantment. So, for the low cost of 2 mana, if there's an enchantment on the board that your opponents are playing, you just take it. That's it. It's that simple. And
how
you
many
would
times
say, hey,
did you just say enchantment?
Enchantments. You would say, how often is there an enchantment on the battlefield that I want? The answer, sharks, is quite often because you have 3 opponents and the bar for stealing something at 2 mana is kind of low. Honestly, if there's like a wild growth on the battlefield, well, no, that's not very good. But if there's like a Rhystic study, I'm taking a Smothering Tithe. I'm taking it. Any random enchantment that I guess isn't already enchanted on a land like Wild Growth, because that would not be good. I'm taking it. And it's just anything I want for 2 mana. That's the thing. Is it's like variance, pretty decent, but for two mana, I'll do it. It's obviously better in an Enchantress deck, and you got more synergies, blah, 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 but, like, I'm going to take the gamble on two mana, steal something, make somebody cry. It's the blue way.
You know what's not a gamble? The price tag.
Yeah, that's
how much
yeah,
is it?
This one's it's 15,
14 bucks. Oh,
14 bucks.
It's, yeah, I never reprinted printed in Stronghold.
I was gonna say
it's 15 bucks.
Yeah,
and
but it's
absurdly
funny.
Dependent on everyone else doing things that I want, right?
Yeah, because there's something decent that's an enchantment in their deck, right? Like most decks have like at least like so, five enchantments going on. You have like
I'm
a great pact in Aristocrats. I'll take
it. Clicking through a Clash episode here, and there's the black and the green room, the closet and the annex.
Walk-in closet?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh. I'd take
let's
it.
Let's see if I find another episode, because that's kind of it for this episode.
We have a lot
just
of
clicking through this, obviously.
Ghostly prisons, propagandas show up a lot in our games. Mm-hmm. Like, those I see a lot. We have Rhystic Study, Smothering Tides, House Band, so in the greater meta, yeah, you'll see those more than you would on Clash. I feel like Tomer, I don't know if you've ever watched the Shark Tank, and there's always the person that comes in and is like, my company hasn't sold anything. I would like to get $500 million from you, Sharks. I feel like this is kind of that pitch with the $15.
This is 14 bucks.
The $14. Yeah, uncommon.
Of loyalty, yeah.
I mean, my concern with this card, I think it's very powerful. I am naturally skeptical of cards, though, that sometimes just do nothing. And I know you say any card does that, but like I'm afraid there's going to be too many games where no one plays a meaningful enchantment and this is just stuck in my hand. I remember, like, was it Reap? What was the card that popped off and got really expensive and hyped because it was like, oh, if a black thing dies, you draw all the cards. And I was like, why wouldn't I even play this? Like, what if no one's playing black? I don't want to put a card
compost
in my deck that compost. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put a card in my deck that only works against black decks. I want it to work against all the decks. And I feel like this has a little bit of that in there for me. Like, if I'm playing Enchantress, sure, but I don't think I would just jam this in any blue deck because I'm afraid there's just not going to be enough targets. So I think I'm out on this one.
Mana. If it's two artifact mana or enchantment, yeah, but enchantment is, like, besides Planeswalker, I think the least
If you could steal Mana Rocks
popular
with it,
type,
then I could think of it like a ramp spell a lot more easily. Like, oh, this is like a weird blue ramp spell, but it's harder to do that with an only hitting enchantments.
But Thieving Skydiver, if you want to steal like a signet or something, it's four
mana. It is
mana.
Expensive, man. Well, it is
two
expensive.
Well, it's
it
two. Is. You just have it hanging around. And whenever there's anything decent, you just steal it.
I thought this card was like 25 cents. I think I have a whole bunch in my bulk. I'm going to have to go bulk digging now that I realize these cards are $14.
Oh, it's a Tempest. It's not Stronghold.
Yeah,
but it's not reserved list, right?
No, it's an uncommon. It's not on the reserve list at
all.
But
Krim is a fellow troll. And he likes blue.
Are you in Krim?
I feel like,
textbook
I feel like this is
so funny.
The Krim card.
I think
funny.
If you read it out.
Funny. But like the problem is, again, I could see me playing this randomly as a one-off for a moment, but I would actually not pay $15 to own a very, very niche, specific card that is very dependent on your stuff being good, right? Because
it's funny,
let's say I just steal, like, the only legal target. You know what I mean? That it's like, oh, man, all right, I'll just take it because I have nothing to do.
Yeah.
The floor is pretty rough on this, right?
But what if it was cheaper? I don't know. In card market, I got this one for $5.
So I
that's
say,
the benefit of being in Europe, though.
Even if it was still 45 cents, I would still be out. Like the price thing is funny to me, man. But the real issue, but we don't have a budget on Commander Clash or anything, so it's not like I couldn't play it because it's $15. But the issue for me is just like the consistency. I just worry when I think of our Clash games, I can think of like one out of every five games, this card's probably busted. And then the other four games, I feel like I'm going to be very sad I have it in my deck because I feel like I'm just not going to have a great target. So that's why I'm out, is I just worry about the consistency. But I do see how the ceiling is really high because two mana is super cheap for this effect. So in the games where it pops off, it's going to feel great.
All right. It seems like
so
two nos,
Sharks,
three nines.
I mean, I can't take this. I like stealing stuff. It's enchantment. Why isn't it enchantment or artifact? Then it would be great. Probably very expensive, actually.
I don't need your investment money anyway. I mean, this is going to go to the moon.
to the moon.
It's already pretty close for an uncommon.
All right, Sharks. I got my second pitch for you. So let me ask you, Sharks. What is your go-to ramp card for colors that aren't good at ramping? There's one card that every time we do the stats episode ends up near the very top of our most played creature list, and that is Solemn Simulacrum. We all play Solemn Simulacrum. It's one of just like the best colorless ramp spells. So what does Solemn Simulacrum actually do? For 4 mana, it ramps you, and then when it dies, it draws you a card. So 4 mana, ramp and draw a card, one of the most played creatures on Commander Clash. But what no one realizes is that Wizards actually printed another, and even better in some ways, Solemn in Edge of Eternities in the form of the Eldrazi Anti-Casual Vestige. So the way the Anti-Casual Vestige is worded, it's a little bit different than Solemn, but it actually works in a really similar way with some extra upside. You can warp it in for 4 mana. On your end step, it leaves the battlefield. You draw a card. You get to put a thing into play tapped, which can be a land. So that's 4 mana, colorless, draw a card, ramp a land. The downside is you don't have a 2-2 blocker on the battlefield the turn that you play the Solemn. But I think that Anti-Casual makes up for this by being a massive body that you can play from exile later and then eventually get that trigger again in the future. So eventually end up with a way bigger body on the battlefield. So I think that this does pretty much everything that Solemn does, but it actually does it even better because you don't even have to put a land into play with its ability. You can put something else into play if you want to. So I know it probably sounds like sacrilege, but assuming you're playing enough lands in your deck, if you're a 32 land believer, it's going to get a lot worse because the risk is that you don't have the extra land to put into play after you draw the card, then the ramp plan kind of falls apart. But if you're playing 38, 39, 40 lands, it shouldn't be a problem. But this is a card that it's played in 1% of decks according to EDH Rec. Why Solemn Simulacrum in like 13% of decks. So I'm here to sell you on Anti-Casual Vestige being a card that you should just play like Solemn Simulacrum. This isn't an Eldrazi card. It's not a card for colorless decks. It's a card that you should just play in any deck. It doesn't even require you to run a bunch of basic lands because it can put non-basic lands into play. So this is just like Solemn that was updated for 2025. It's just Solemn, but plus. So Anti-Casual Vestige. What do you think, Sharks?
No. First off, I love that the name has stuck of anti-casual as opposed to anti-causal.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's not for casual play, so I would say no, I'm out. It says it in the name.
It's in the name. It's in the name. And on top of that, you don't got to sell me on anything because, okay, so imagine Pull Through the Weft, okay? Now, I played that, took that out. And I've played Anti-Casual Vestige. Now, this card is gas. This card is the truth. This card is so darn good. I didn't even know this card was only a dollar and some change. Yeah. I thought, in my mind, this is already up to the clouds, right? Like, in price. Because this card is so good.
It's really good.
It's super Solemn. And like, that's why I like it. And the fact that, like you had mentioned, getting to play it again and putting any permanent into play when it leaves. Not when it gets, when it dies or anything like that. If they bounce it, if you bounce it, whatever. Doesn't matter. You draw, you put something into play. This card is super good.
Yeah. Tomer, Phil.
I mean, this card is good, right? Like, I thought we all knew this card is good. It's good.
Oh, why don't we 1% of decks play it? Why don't we play it?
I always forget
in every
about
deck?
It. It feels it's. I don't know. It's. I just think about Solemn, but this one kind of just forget about. Yeah. Although I don't know where I would just play it in any of my paper decks. Although that's a generic problem, like if it's not insanely on theme, I don't try to make cards in my decks where I love every card and it's the expensive versions. But for Clash, I'll definitely keep this in mind.
Did you know though, Phil, that when you play this to like warp already without putting another land in, you can put Caretaker's Talon.
I know.
It's like it is better than just a land because it has that versatility in it.
Yeah.
It's you're warping in something for 4 mana that is 6 mana value. So if you have anything like sacrifice equal to mana value or cares about mana value, you get it cheaper.
Talking about that.
It blinks.
Equal to power? 7 power.
So
just plea of wait. Desperate Plea. Desperate Plea. Same power. Ooh, Rihanna made a Avenger of Zendikar or something.
Pretty much
a little bit of a magical wonderland.
Yeah. That's very good with Blink. It's very good with Haste. It's like, it's a very good card. It's a very good card.
Right. And you saw it go wild in already a few episodes of Clash, right? The week when I played my Venom deck, this is in there, and like, oh my god, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I would just say, it sounds like everyone's on board with this card. I would just say for the listeners out there, my pitch is don't view it as just a card for like those colorless decks or whatever. I think this is a card that you can play in like basically any deck and get value out of, which just doesn't seem to be how people play it according to the EDH rec, which is it seems like people only play it in like specific decks when I think this could just be like a generic staple that you can make use of in basically any deck. Let's do one more round. Round three. Let's go back to Phil. What do you got for us?
All right. For some reason, I'm very into sacrificing and graveyard and whatever. And this one is another uncommon, so very budgety today, 20 cents, Hollow Marauder, 7 mana, but it costs 1 less to cast for each creature spell in your graveyard. Obviously, we are talking very niche decks here, but as long as you're either sacrificing or self-milling, this will get very cheap. And then Flying 4-2, when it enters the battlefield, any number of target opponent each discard a card. For each of those opponents who didn't discard a card with mana value 4 or greater, draw a card. So, wait, I forgot the card that we always played. For 4 mana, everybody discards a card, you draw a card.
Siphon Mind.
Siphon Mind.
So it is similar to a Siphon Mind effect. And I think, obviously, you gotta have some creatures in your graveyard. I think it starts getting interesting at 4, like Siphon Mind. And then I think a lot of times in the late game, probably, this would be just 1 mana, and then you can sacrifice it with Desperate Plea, and then search for something, reanimate a 4 power thing, and then
he's
get it back
wild.
With pull through the map.
Combo.
It's a whole deck today. Yeah, it is very budget and a little niche, but I think this card plays very good for an uncommon.
Are you just reciting my Venom deck list? All the cards say Vestige, Hollow Marauder. Yeah, I love this card. I don't know if I play this generically, but I do love this card in the right style of deck. Yeah. Like the
I need to update some of my budget brews because it's just good in Aristocrats and I forgot it existed. Too much text, I think. I think my eyes was glossed over after the flying bit.
I mean, if you can get the cost down to 4 or less, the card seems great. Like, maybe even at 5, it wouldn't be that bad, because you are getting a 4-2 flying body out of it, which isn't that bad. And then I imagine with the discard mode, yeah, there's going to be some times where someone discards something expensive and you don't get the card draw out of it. But a lot of times when people discard, they're discarding like an extra land or something like that. So I feel like most of the time you should get to draw like 2 or 3 cards off of this, which seems kind of insane. I'm in.
Night. 20 cents.
can't beat that. All right, yeah, good pick. Well, let's move on to Krim. Krim, what do you got for your last pick?
I got to pick between two. Okay, All right. It's only $5. It's Elesh Norn. Just Elesh Norn, the one that flips into the saga.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Elesh Norn, the saga one. 2 white, vigilant. Whenever a source an opponent controls deals damage to you or a permanent you control, that source's controller loses 2 life unless they pay 1. And then you can pay 2 white, sack 3 other creatures, exile it, it flips, it becomes this whole saga. The first one is incubate 2 5 times, then transform all incubate tokens into incubator tokens you control. And then second chapter, creatures you control get 1/1 and gain double strike. Then chapter 3, destroy all other permanents except for artifacts, lands, and Phyrexians, exile. Flip, start over again. This card, okay, I'll be honest with you, I don't really ever flip this card. I just keep the front side. The front side alone has made it so that all the little random chip damage, because they'll have to start paying the 1. And if Tomer hates being asked to pay the 1 with Rhystic Study, well, let me tell you something. I have now found another way to ask if you want to pay the 1 again. And so if the dream is a blue-white deck where you play both Rhystic and Elesh Norn, you can ask people to pay the 1 all day long. But the main thing here is this card just burns people for 2. I think, Phil, we played a Commander Clash game where, awkwardly enough, that damage, whenever you deal damage to me or a permanent I control, unless you pay one, mattered. Because you could not be fully aggressive.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this card. I think this card is only $5 right now, and this has been so good at warding off attackers, A, because it's a vigilant 3-5, and the pay the one dealing 2. It's just one of those things where no one thinks about it. I'm playing Commander. It's 40 life. Who cares? It matters.
I'm undecided. I don't think
I'm also like going back and forth
like
on this one.
This is like a ghostly prison, but then he could just choose to punch me in the face. And like, yeah, you lose life, but I'm getting punched in the face.
With Norn's Annex, this?
But it's also not on an enchantment, so it can get just eaten by a sweeper or whatever more easily.
What? Yeah, but like that's every creature. Right, like that's every
then
creature.
I just run Ghostly Prison.
You play this with Ghostly Prison, but then the problem
monster.
Here is Ghostly Prison is actually not aggressive enough. Ghostly Prison doesn't allow them to attack you. You want them to actively attack you so that you actively deal them the damage. Whereas people just entirely ignore you if you have Ghostly Prison. As someone who wants blood to be drawn, Elesh Norn does that in with like any deck with white. And Norn's Annex. Oh, there's so much sauce there. There's so much flavor.
Oh,
come on.
There's flavor. I like the callback.
The flavor is good.
I don't want to be punched in the face, Krim.
But what if I told you if they punch you, I would rather you punch me and take 4 than rather just ignore me all around. Because I actually believe this is a non-bow with Elesh Norn and Ghostly Prison, because I want you to hit me and my stuff.
See, I don't think I want to get hit, though. Like, I'm kind of stuck at the same place Tomer is, where I'm like, okay, if the argument was, oh, I'm playing this because I can flip into this really powerful backside saga, then I could be like, okay, like, maybe there's something going on with the backside. But if the plan is just to leave it on the front side, like, is this actually better than just playing like a Windborne Muse or a Ghostly, you know, Prison on a stick style effect? Because it seems like it kind of does the same thing.
No, not the same. Guys, aggression. Commander games go for too long, right? No one thinks about it until all of a sudden their life is like halfway chewed through. I promise you.
I could see, like, if you're up against a token deck and they have a bunch of 1/1s and they attack you, it's going to be a ridiculous amount of damage. Or, like, you cast a Blasphemous Act and have to take a ton of damage. So I could see scenarios where it's good. It's just hard for me to see how it's better to take damage and make your opponent lose 2 than just to like, keep them from damaging you in the first place with, like, a Ghostly Prison style effect.
If you can force them to Blast Act you, that would be...
Yeah, if you're, like, building some combo around it, you could probably do some really funny things. Yeah.
Y'all gotta get
but
more
then you'd
aggressive.
Be able to go wide? Okay, you have to have a go wide token deck, and then you somehow play Hive Mind, and you cast Blast Act, and they copy it first. And you have like 20 creatures on the board that lose 40 life.
Got them.
You just play creatures.
Okay, I'm in.
What do you think on this, Phil?
So I played the card in just white creature decks. It feels a little generic, I think. Like there's not too much, since it's, even if you trigger it, it's optional. I guess if you flip it, it's good, but that's kind of hard. I like the card. I like it. Is a very good body for an effect like this, I think. Like a Windborne Muse just gets bolted, maybe not lightning bolted, but it just gets swept up with everything. And this one is a little chunkier, good at attacking, good at blocking. I like it. Just it's not very synergistic with anything, but it is like all these Praetors. I play Shieldred, I play Vorinclex, and I think that's the when I play the third most.
I'm still torn on this, but on the other hand, like even small incentives keep people from attacking in Commander, so maybe, but then you're just playing Ghostly Prison anyway.
Hold on, but if you're playing this, so you have a board as well. So
I
this
like
now
that.
Makes a lot of attacks feel real bad, right? Because now you're going to take 2 on the attack. You're still going to be able to, like, and they also, if you swing in, are they going to block? Okay, if they do, then they have to also pay the 1. So you kind of got your damage in. Anyways, this is like an aggressive Ghostly Prison, and that is so much better to me because it ends the game.
Yeah. I get where you're coming from. I think I'm just an actual ghostly prison believer. Like, I can see where you're coming from. I don't want to take the hits. Why just prevent them altogether and not take them? So I think.
But what about your things? It makes your blocks so much better.
No. Okay, I'll give you $1. Does that count? I'll give you $1 investment.
I'll pay the one.
I'll pay the one once. Okay,
$1.
Very small investment. Very small investment because Commander Games do need to end. So yes, a charitable donation to Elish Norn.
I'll take it.
All right, Tomer, what do you got for your last pitch?
All right, in penance for the fact that I accidentally suggested a $14 card before, I'm going to go back with another banger from Edge of Eternities. This is Extinguisher Battleship. 8-mana, colorless artifact spacecraft. When it enters, destroy target non-creature permanent. Then the spacecraft deals 4 damage to each creature as station. And when it's at 5 or more, it's flying, trample, 10. So this card, I glossed over until, again, I was building the 40 decks under $40. And I started just, like, jamming it into a bunch of decks that don't traditionally have good non-creature removal. So, like, black decks, red decks, green decks that don't typically have that many board wipes for creatures. And I was like, yep, this is actually working. I like that it hits any non-creature permanent one at ETBs, which means if there is a land, thank God, you can finally hit it. Unlike Meteor Golems of the world, this one can hit lands. Congratulations. And then 4 damage, it won't kill the biggest creatures, but it will kill most creatures. And then it becomes a 10-10 flying trampler. And that doesn't sound like anything. It sounds like whatever, a gloss over. I've turned this into a creature multiple times at this point. It matters. It matters. A 10-10 flying trample is going to kill people. And 5 to charge it up is not that much. It's not that much. And I think the card is good. All right.
Okay. This card.
This goes live real easily. 5+ yeah. to station. This happens more often than not. I think we saw Seth pop off with that. We've seen you pop off with that, Tomer. I think this card is super sweet. I think I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
This card's great. Because it only deals 4 damage, you can often have a creature that's big enough to just immediately crew it up and station it up and have the 10-10 right away that, like, survives the damage from its ETB. So, yeah, I played this card a few times.
Like Elish Norn.
Elish Norn actually survives the 4 damage.
No, it does. Come Elish Norn, but it kind of, if you give your opponents that battleship.
But the card's really good. I think it's the best Meteor Golem variant we've gotten so far. So yeah, doesn't always sweep the board, but still the card's great.
I wish Mishra could take the hit. I kind of misread this in spoiler season. Because I mentioned this in the podcast when EOE came out. I did not put it into any decks yet, but I think it's like a way more chill Ugin. Like for decks that can't really wrap the board. At least it's over after this one. You deal with something you really hate, and then small things get swept up. And, I mean, 10-10 Flying Trample. The crew 5 is actually very easy. Well, like Station 5. So yeah. I do like the card, yeah.
I put it in my Seki deck because Seki likes taking damage, and I needed more ways of wiping the board outside of like Azura's Predation. Mm-hmm. And it was funny. And then I put it in my Boros Sephiroth deck because Sephiroth turns all your creatures to 7/5, so they just survive the battleship. And then I was like, wait a minute, is this card just actually decent? And I just started putting it in more and more decks, and yeah, it's actually pretty decent.
It's worth it. Yeah, I think we got everyone on board with this one.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. All right. So my last pick. We'll see what you guys think about this one, because this is another card that you know, but I'm going to sell you on playing it differently than you play it now. So y'all know Leyland of Anticipation, the blue ley line, gives everything flash, right? People play it in like Kadena, Alayla, Cunning Conqueror, these decks that care about flashing. But what I'm here to sell you is you should just be playing it in all of your decks, but not for the reason that you think probably. So everyone knows that being able to play at instant speed is really powerful, right? You can get your threats in around counter spells. You can trigger stuff on your opponent's turn. You can leave up your mana to counter something and then flash in something if you don't need to. But the thing that people miss about this card is the power of just simply leaving up your mana. Just passing your turn with all of your mana up is incredibly powerful in Commander, because there's nothing that Commander players fear more than the unknown. And this makes sense because it's actually like a real thing in the real world. There was this paper published in the Journal of Anxiety Disorders in 2016 that said the fear of the unknown is a fundamental fear that underlies all of our anxieties and neuroticisms. It's basically hardwired into our brains to be afraid of the unknown. It was an adaptive behavior, right? Because back in the old days, millions of years ago, if something strange was going on, you would survive by going, away from the potentially dangerous situation. So this is just built into our brains. And we see this play out in Commander time and time again. People always kill the morph because of the uncertainty of the facedown creature, even though most morphs suck and aren't worth the removal spell. But people need to get rid of the uncomfortability that they feel because of the unknown. Their brain doesn't like it. And that's the true power ley line of anticipation. It's like this weird propaganda that you just like leave all your mana up. It doesn't even matter what you're doing. And your opponents are going to be so afraid of the unknown, the possibility that if they do anything to you, you could flash something in. If they attack you, you could blow them out. That what they do is they just choose to do nothing. And they just choose to leave you alone for the rest of the game. So my pitch to you is you should play ley line of anticipation in every deck possible, because it basically breaks your opponent's brains and takes advantage of how our brains were hardwired, millions of years ago. So I think you should play this not just like to flash your stuff in, but because it's actually just like psychologically the correct way to build a Magic deck. So what do you think? Ley Line of Anticipation in every deck, Sharks.
I agree, but my counteroffer would be like, why are you running this over High Fate Trickster? Because it's a Ley Line of Anticipation that also has flash. So you could just play that. Also,
you love that card, so, and I have the fancy printing of it.
I also like that card. My argument would be, is a creature High Fate Trickster more likely to die? And if your plan is to like make your opponents fear the unknown and not attack you for a bunch of turns in a row, I think that that's better with Leyline of Anticipation. High Fate Trickster I really do like, because I think the power of that card is because it has flash. It allows you to pull off combos. I think we saw someone do this last season on Commander Clash, where they flash in the High Fate Trickster like end step and then proceeded to like combo off and win the game on their end step with everything having flash. So I think they serve different purposes, but I like the resilience of Leyline, just being less likely to die to creature removal or get swept up by a sweeper.
Oh my god, High Fate Trickster spiked.
Yeah, it's just it's like $9 now.
Is it?
I do like the Trickster.
Not anymore.
I opened a bunch of them, actually.
Lorwyn hype, I guess.
Yes.
Everyone's locked in for Lorwyn. Yeah, okay, I'm in. I buy in. Also, I'm jotting down notes right now for an upcoming video talking about psychology in Commander. That's amazing.
Yeah, I like this.
I want to subscribe. I'd watch a set just talk about psychology and magic tactics. That sounds like hell yes.
Thank you. I find psychology interesting, so.
Like and subscribe if you want.
And subscribe
to do one of these videos.
I will say though, that is the psychology behind it and with the unknown, but if you've played competitive Magic, it's just a morph, who cares? I'm gonna make you have it, right? Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? And I'm gonna keep making you have it.
Been playing
two generic mana up, and people are just like, it's settled. I can't do it.
He's got darkness.
I'm gonna force you to have it every time.
Yeah,
but in Commander you can have. It's just about the risk. Like if you can attack two people and one of them has open mana, I think it's just correct. I think to just say I'm not gonna risk my Commander.
But we've grazed upon how Krim always dunks on us in the game.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
remember, like we played a game fairly recently.
He might
Krim
have a darkness.
Had Stone Cold nothing, but he implanted the idea. He implanted the idea of darkness into Seth's brain.
No, Seth
and Seth was so afraid. Well, you were like, oh, tell me when you go to combat and stuff. He had nothing.
I had a flash blocker. That's what I had.
I will say you are right that it did work and he played me really well, taking advantage of my psychology. But
this is how it works.
I will say
it's effective.
I think I did end up winning that game anyway. So I think it was actually like the
because
correct
he had
thing
nothing.
To do, but, yes, because he had nothing. Anyway, everyone. That's our Shark Tank for this time. You've seen what we invested in. Let us know what you'd invest in out of these pitches. Are there any of these cards that you play with or you want to play, you're going to start playing after this? Let us know in the comments, and we'll be back next week to do it all again. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the Curious signing out.